But I think when it comes to vitamins, specifically vitamin D, supplementation all the way through, consistency is incredibly important, especially if you consider the half-life of vitamin D. We've certainly been involved in some of those studies as well. And interestingly, we did a pilot study with Kansas State University also a couple of years ago, where we put a load of animals on a truck and we transported them from Dixon, Tennessee over to KSU's research facility. And just that transportation process stress affected those animals to the degree where we had a 27% reduction in the vitamin D status, the 25-hydroxy D3 status. So then you'll ask yourself, well, if that's what transport stress does, what happens when we change groups? We change our feed bunk delivery systems. Does that all compound the situation? So definitely, yes.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Molinix, and today I'm lucky to have Zeno Hubbard with me. Welcome to the show, Zeno.
Thanks, Travis. Glad to be here this morning.
It's been a while since I've seen you. We both went to New Mexico State. We kind of have that background of living in southern New Mexico. You were more on the feedlot side. I was on the cow-calf range side. So we've crossed paths a little bit over the years. Now you are a technical expert with DSM, correct?
That's right.
And so, just for the audience sake, can you just give your background on, your feedlot nutritionist training, but just give the audience your background of, and how you got where you are today.
Sure. Travis, so I really started my career in South Africa. I did a master's degree in dairy nutrition at the University of Pretoria. And then I entered industry and really had quite a few roles as a commercial nutritionist in the industry over there. And then came over to the States in 2015 to do a PhD in feedlot nutrition at New Mexico State University, as you mentioned. And after spending some time working with some consultants and, getting more experience of the industry, decided that this is where I wanted to base myself. I also had a role with Trail Nutrition Nutreco in the Netherlands as a beef expert in their innovation team. And after that, joined Kemen in the US in various different roles, technical marketing as well. And now since end of last year, I'm with DSM Firmenich, focused primarily on beef nutrition, but also some crossover to the dairy side of things. So I think from a background perspective, very much varied across beef and dairy, but my passion is beef nutrition.
Yeah, that's great. And if no one's picked up from the accent, you are from South Africa. One of many of our talented South Africans here in the United States that have gotten PhDs, stayed in the United States, and really have made a big impact to our producers in the United States.
Yeah, I think we've also had a very good working relationship between U.S. nutritionist consultants over the years and the South African industry. And it's been that exposure, I think, that's driven some of our students to come over to the U.S. as well. So a lot of similarity between the way we raise cattle and grow them.
Yeah. Definitely so.
Everyone knows vitamin D affects bone formation, immunity, and growth. What everyone doesn't know is research shows cattle don't get enough vitamin D. High D from DSM Firmenich optimizes health and growth with a more bioavailable form of vitamin D. And data shows high D fed heifers weighed over 8 pounds more at weaning. Don't let your cattle be vitamin deficient. Meet the growing needs of your herd year-round with High D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
So today we're going to talk about improving performance and health of beef cattle through vitamin D optimization. And so kind of give me an overview of what that means to you when you think of optimizing vitamin D.
Travis, when we talk about vitamins, for me, immediately I think about essential nutrients. It's not an additive that we try and find a performance response or a health response to. It's an essential requirement, especially if we look at the NRC beef. It's a recommendation. We need those nutrients. When it comes to vitamin D, I'm really excited specifically on the performance prospects of vitamin D optimization. Because as you know, today, there's very few new technologies that we have access to in terms of being able to manipulate growth. We've got quite a few restrictions even on the growth implant side of things. And a lot of the work that's been done with vitamin D optimization, more so in, I'd say, broiler birds, swine species, points towards the fact that we can actually manipulate muscle growth. Mm-hmm. And that there's, in addition to the obvious health response or immune response of optimization of vitamin D, there's also an opportunity for nutritionists to use this as a tool to manipulate muscle growth.
Yeah.
So I think we are all critically looking at optimization of vitamin D today, recognizing, yes, it's an essential nutrient, but how much more can we do with this nutrient? And what research we need to do, you know, to be able to show that response in beef cattle specifically. There's been a lot of work done as well recently looking at the levels in our cattle. We all know the way we raise beef cattle, we've got sun exposure basically 365 days of the year. So there's a lot of those preconceived notions I think we need to work through in terms of, do we really need to supply additional vitamin D, what those levels are, and what the benefit would be to the producer to do so.
Yeah, you know, mineral and vitamin supplementation is not new, right? And so, but there is just here recently in the last few years, this hot topic of vitamin supplementation, especially around vitamin A, vitamin D. And so why do you feel like, and you talked a little about the growth aspect, but why is it so hot right now of this big interest in how we're supplementing vitamin D? Are we supplementing enough vitamin D and the timing of that?
I think maybe a lot of this started back in 2016, even when the Feed Loss Nutritionist Survey came out. And that was interestingly conducted by the group from New Mexico State University. And looking at that publication or that survey, it shows that if we look at the NRC recommendations, or NRC today called NASM, recommendations of vitamins, and we compare that to what our industry are actually supplementing, be it vitamin A, D, or E, we're way below those recommendations. So following that, a lot of research has been focused specifically on vitamin A, vitamin D, trying to see why our nutritionists aren't supplementing that level and what the benefit would be to do that. So I think if we focus on vitamin D, we see today that nutritionists in the industry are basically supplementing about half, 50% of the NRC recommendation for vitamin D. That's about 1,400 IUs per head per day compared to the nearly 3,000 international units of vitamin D on a per head per day basis. If we look at that New Mexico State survey, the mode of that vitamin D supplementation rate is about zero. So many nutritionists are actually not even supplementing vitamin D. And then it brings us back to the vast amount of data that supports vitamin D supplementation, not just in beef cattle, in all species, which is very strong. So I think that's what's driving a lot of research at various universities today in that area.
You know, when you think about livestock, especially grazing livestock, and even from a feedlot standpoint, is they're exposed to sunlight. They're outside. And so we think about, you know, them getting their vitamin D through that exposure, correct? Some environments, you know, especially in the wintertime, there's limited sunlight. And so you'd expect there's some deficiency in vitamin D that can occur. But why is there the need of looking at some of these supplementation in the form of, what is it, 25-hydroxy vitamin D in some of these herds, and even in the feedlot standpoint of receiving these calves that come in that could have been deficient in some of these environments? So are we seeing a benefit of research of supplementing vitamin D at that point, or?
That's a great question. It really brings us back to the why. You know, why do we even need to consider vitamin D optimization? And I think if we look at the metabolism of vitamin D, we know that through UVB radiation in the skin, the 7-dehydrocholesterol will be converted to cholecalciferol in the skin. And that's then the main source of vitamin D to that calf or to that steer. And in addition to the vitamin D3 that is or is not supplemented in the ration, those sources will then go to the liver where they're hydroxylated into 25-hydroxyvitamin D3, which is the circulating form of vitamin D in the animal. The reason for supplementation, above all of that, there's two reasons. Number one, there's seasonal fluctuation in the level of vitamin D3 production in those animals as a result of sun exposure. Data that we've got access to, it's actually been commercial data we've obtained from commercial feed yards about a couple of years ago, shows that there's a 74 to 75 nanograms per milliliter 25-hydroxyvitamin D3 fluctuation between summer and winter time. So that's the effect of the seasonal impact. The second and mainly, I'd say, probably the most important reason for supplementation would be that bottleneck in the liver. A lot of the work coming out of the University of Florida, Dr. Gorman Nelson Santos's work, shows that there's a bottleneck created in the liver, and there's a limit to how much vitamin D3 can actually be converted into that 25-hydroxyvitamin D3 level. And we all know there's various products available in the market to supply 25-hydroxyvitamin D3. But what's important there is it's only 25-hydroxyvitamin D3 after hydroxylation in the liver that the animal actually has access to do something with. That is the circulating form. It's also the form of vitamin D in animals, even in humans, that we measure as an indication of their vitamin D status. So once we have that 25-hydroxy D3 in the liver, it's then still not usable to the animal. It has to go to the kidney, for example, where it's further hydroxylated into 1,25-dihydrocholecalciferol. And that then is the, they call it the bioactive or the hormonal form of vitamin D. And interesting, even the macrophages of the immune system is able to hydroxylate that 25-hydroxyvitamin D3 into 1,25, the active form. And that can then go and bind onto the vitamin D receptors and have an actual impact on the animal in various tissues throughout the body. So that's the reason for supplementation, bottleneck and seasonal fluctuations.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially when you think about maybe even like gestation of these calves, of cows being in these environments that are a little colder, lack of sunlight maybe. Are they born deficient, and do they ever catch up and they get to the feedlot and being still deficient in vitamin D?
And that's a good point. And we actually see that deficiency. There's quite a few surveys that's been conducted. One of them also, Dr. Corwin Nelson's group, where they looked at the status of the gestating cow. And they looked at the level in the colostrum. They looked at the vitamin D3 status in the calf. And they were able to show that there's a very strong correlation. I believe it's almost 0.88 between that maternal vitamin D status and that of the newborn calf. So we're actually able to manipulate the status of that calf at birth. And then if you look at the level of vitamin D3 in colostrum at birth, it's only about 51% of the requirement, of the NRC requirement of that calf. So again, definitely the need there for intervention, for supplementation, not only during that milk replacement, but also during that milk starter and dry feed as well, calf starter, dry feed too.
So what other current research is going on with vitamin D? I know you're more on the feedlot side, but, you know, we do work in the system that some of these calves may be coming in and deficient states as well. But what kind of research is going on supporting additional vitamin D supplementation?
I think most of the work today is focused around the immune health response. And then some researchers are focused more about on the muscle anabolism or hypertrophy response. If we look at the immune health response, the focus there is more on the ability to mitigate morbidity. We know the role that vitamin D plays in terms of maintaining that mucosal epithelial barrier, for example, example, producing defense proteins to fend off bacteria as well. So some researchers, especially Dr. Stephanie Hansen, she's running some research with us as well. Our State University focus on that BRD, potential BRD mitigation response. We've done some work at Kansas State University as well, looking at how optimization of vitamin D, not specifically 25-hydroxy, but vitamin D as a whole, is able to mitigate morbidity and mortality in medium to high-risk coughs as well. Mm-hmm. I think the majority of the focus today is probably on the muscle growth response. There's a lot of interest based on data that we've obtained out of Brazil. About 3 to 4 different research studies we ran as DSM with the University of Sao Paulo over there over the years. Most of those studies were conducted on Nalor cattle, so more of a Brahman type of influence, over a 100-day feeding period with highly 25-hydroxy-D3 supplementation. And what we saw there was an increase not only in dressing percent, which is most of the time a subjective measurement, but about a 7 to 10-pound increase in heart carcass weight at the end of that finishing period. And that was in the absence of a base level of vitamin D3 supplementation. Cattle in Brazil is not implanted. They don't make use of a beta agonist. So research today, where specifically us as a company are interested in as well, is trying to ascertain the response to 25-hydroxy-D3 supplementation during the growth period in US-based cattle. And considering the way we feed cattle, our implant programs, the use of beta agonists, we're expecting an equal or higher response to 25-hydroxy-D3 supplementation. So I think it's a two-pronged approach. We definitely have the data to support that immune health response, and now also focusing on that carcass weight response as well, in addition to supplementation.
So would there be any benefit, and I know Stephanie has done some transport studies, stress studies, but you think about, you know, weaning, shipping calves, and them coming in depleted on the immune side, is would there be any benefit of you know, even a injection of vitamin D prior to shipment, those calves coming in before they get to the feedlot? Because there's a lot of great work that's on the feedlot side, on the stress side, but a lot of times we need some of that to occur before they're shipped.
I think it's important that we consider the impact of stress on the vitamin status of the animal as a whole. But I think when it comes to vitamins, specifically vitamin D, supplementation all the way through, consistency is incredibly important, especially if you consider the half-life of vitamin D. We've certainly been involved in some of those studies as well. And interestingly, we did a pilot study with Kansas State University also a couple of years ago, where we put a load of animals on a truck and we transported them from Dixon, Tennessee over to KSU's research facility. And just that transportation process stress affected those animals to the degree where we had a 27% reduction in the vitamin D status, the 25-hydroxy-D3 status. So then you'll ask yourself, well, if that's what transport stress does, what happens when we change groups? We change our feed bunk delivery systems. Does that all compound the situation? So definitely, yes, for receiving cattle, we can advocate for supplementation. But as a nutritionist, I think our recommendation is we need some adequate vitamin D status all the way through. We have no control over stress. We need to make sure they're able to, you know, to have a robust immune system. And then if there's a performance response, be ready as well. So if you look at our recommendation levels from DSM as a whole, we tend to be slightly higher than the NRC. We recommend about a 5,000 to 7,000 IUs vitamin D per head per day, and then also 1 milligram of 25-hydroxy vitamin D3, which will then also take care of that bottleneck that exists in terms of how much vitamin D3 can be converted to 25-hydroxy D3.
So is that recommendation, does that change from different classification of animals, of, you know, weaned calf?
Yeah. So we have different recommendations for breeding stock. That would be about between, I'd say, 5,000 and 10,000 IUs per head per day, including your breeding bulls as well. If we look at our calves, calf starters, milk replacers, that's around 3,000 to 4,000 IUs per head per day. And then our finishing cattle between 5,000 to 7,000, in addition to that 1 milligram of 25 hydroxy vitamin D3.
So how do we, and I know, you know, and there's questions about vitamin A as well from a lot of those standpoints, is some of these recommendations from a vitamin are older recommendations that haven't been updated. And a lot of the challenge is we just don't have enough data to make a change in the NASOM, I guess you'd call it now, a recommendation for vitamin D. Are we getting to that point of there's enough data that we know we need to update that and change that recommendation for all classification groups at this point?
I think there's certainly a lot of interest in that area at the moment. One part of that answer probably brings us back to what the optimal level in the animal looks like. What does that optimal level of sufficiency need to be? And again, I think Dr. Nelson's group at University of Florida did a lot of work in that area. We know now, but however, most of that work's been done in dairy cattle. So I think we're slightly lagging behind on the beef side. We are aiming for that 100 nanograms per milliliter 25 hydroxy vitamin D3 in the serum for cattle species to support optimal health and optimal performance. If we get down to the 40 to the 80 nanograms per milliliter, that's more in the sufficiency or the adequacy range. However, some of the data we've seen of animals coming into the feed yard, they enter as receiving cattle as low as 10 to 11 nanograms per milliliter. So certainly almost deficient in vitamin D3. And then also we see that seasonal fluctuation rate of 75 nanograms. So the question still is, how high do we need to go to support optimal performance?
What's interesting is, so they're coming in the feedlot. More likely they're coming in the early fall, October, September, October, November timeframe, right? And so they go through these sunny periods of the summer, and you would think from that exposure, they wouldn't be that deficient. And so from your data, you're saying that even with sun exposure, we are very much deficient in vitamin D for these calves coming into the feedlot.
There's actually an interesting study that's been done by researchers at Clay Center in Nebraska, the USDA station, where they followed two crops of calves over 2011, 2012, I believe. And they were able to show the changes in their 25-hydroxy D3 status over different periods in their growth period. So in the summer period, they were around 60, 55 nanograms per milliliter, which is not terribly deficient at all. We can still work with that. When they got to the feedlot as yearlings, however, in the middle of the winter, that level of vitamin D dropped down to about 11, 12 nanograms per milliliter, definitely deficient. So there's a lot of variation, even in the midst of sun exposure. Some of the surveys looking at grazing cows show that the summer, they're about 75 nanograms per milliliter on average. In the winter, that comes down to about 60. So even at that 75 nanogram level, we're still below the optimal level to support immune function and productivity.
Especially when you impose a stress on top of that, right? Is if we're borderline already, and then you ship, for whatever reason, you know, ship to a feedlot, and that's, you know, that would be the knock on the Clay Center study, even though they showed the deficiency, is shipping for them is just next door. Versus going states away or, you know, miles away and being on a truck for 8+ hours. And so now they're borderline, you ship only impose a stress, and now they're very deficient.
Indeed. And I think, especially if we come back to the concept of immune response with vitamin D, there's so much data showing that role of vitamin D in a robust immune system. There's data that we've shown the role of vitamin D, specifically 25-hydroxy D3, as in gene transcription. It's actually acting as a transcription factor in gene expression of specific genes related to immune health. Again, the group from Florida University showed some work in transition cows where they supplemented them with 25-hydroxy D3, and they were able to show an upregulation in the gene expression of genes associated with cell adhesion, with antimicrobial activities. So definitely there's a role for supplementation there in immune response as well. There's also some data that's looked at challenging dairy cattle with streptococcus challenge, basically mastitis challenge. And with supplementation of this 25-hydroxy-D3 source, they were able to reduce the severity of the mastitis infection significantly as a result as well.
So definitely around those immune challenge time points, it's very critical to know what your vitamin D status is. But you need to be ahead of the game by that point anyways.
Yeah, and as we discussed earlier, there's different ways to supplement that. Again, as nutritionists, we try to have that animals have access to a consistent intake of that nutrient, specifically when we talk about small quantities on a daily basis.
Yeah, so what's your advice for a producer or a consulting nutritionist around vitamin D status and making those changes they need in their diets to make sure they're meeting their needs for vitamin D?
I think today, as nutritionists, our number one, I'd say, guide in terms of our nutritional recommendations still is the NASM beef recommendations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that went into those. So if we're going to supplement, at least let's supplement according to those recommendations. I think there's enough data to support that supplementation. Also, from a risk perspective, I think if we look specifically at the value of breeding stock today, it's really not worth it to not supplement those animals, considering the vast amount of data that supports vitamin D supplementation in terms of its role in immune response. There's a very strong impact in terms of reproductive efficiency as well. Yep. So just considering the value of that animal, we need to at least have the minimum amount in those diets. And then as we've been discussing, the impact of stress, which we have very little control over on that animal, further just reduces the access that animal has to vitamin D. My recommendation would be at least let's stick to NASM recommendations. And then obviously our OVN recommendations is not just based, you know, on a recommendation merely. It's based on research that we've done internally as well to support an additional performance effect. So I think when we start aiming for that additional performance effect, that's when we go to the higher level of supplementation as well for the different stage of production too.
So, Zeno, as we wrap things up, is there anything you want to touch on that we didn't discuss?
I think, I just wanted to share my excitement about vitamin D in general. I think there's so much research happening today. We spoke briefly about work conducted at Kansas State University, at Iowa State University, also Texas Tech University is working in that area. Dr. Brad Johnson is doing quite a bit of work looking at that muscle hypertrophy effect in feedlot cattle. So I think our industry are taking note, and we are slowly but surely reviewing our vitamin recommendations. Again, it's not a novel, it's not a new nutrient, but I think we're going back to the basics and making sure that we can optimize the nutrition and reap the benefit in our cattle.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's a forgotten thing, and as a nutritionist, as we put some of those aside. But some of those recommendations were based off of, you know, data 40, 50 years ago, and cows are not the same as they were then. And so we're dealing with a totally different beast of an animal, and those recommendations probably don't hold very true today with the type of animals that we're feeding versus when some of those recommendations were made.
That's a great point. I mean, we have a 1,000-pound carcass today.
Yeah.
It's completely different to what we did in the past.
Yep.
And then look at the level of stress that our animals are subjected to as well. So yep. We need to keep up. And the level of productivity have increased too.
Yeah, larger cows, more milk production, but the growth potential, is massive. And so I think it's a very big need in the industry of looking at some of these things that, you know, for so long that we just kind of, you know, it is what it is and went along with it. And we're not meeting those needs today.
Yeah. And also, I think specifically focusing on vitamin D, it's not a matter of going back to the drawing board and having to do so much more research. There's a lot of data available today.
Yeah.
There's a lot of data available in other species that really support supplementation. A lot of work showing, you know, the increase in satellite cell expression, increases in breast milk yield and broiler birds, which we then see as an increase in hog carcass weight and beef cattle. So my question really to a nutritionist today would be, based on the vast amount of data available, and considering the value of our breeding stock, the value even of a receiving calf today in this market, it's really not worth it to risk not supplementation or not optimizing that vitamin D status based on the data, a risk reward. So,
no, I think that's great to wrap us up.
It's time for our famous three.
And so I've got three questions here, and we'll finish the podcast. But the first one is what is your go-to highly recommended beef-related resource that you recommend someone utilizing?
Travis, well, I'm going to show you a copy of this book. And this one got me through grad school. It's a very old publication. Church is the Ruminant Animal. Digestive Physiology and Nutrition.
Yep.
I always have this book open on my desk, whether it's a nutritionist question or, you know, it's just a good reference to have. And then one that's more related to vitamin nutrition, it's this OVN Optimum Vitamin Nutrition resource. It's a great resource for nutritionists. It's published by DSM Firmenich every few years. The last publication was 2022. And really what it is, it's a comprehensive resource in terms of vitamin nutrition in ruminant animals and cattle. Not only just looking at, you know, keeping out of the deficiency category, but focusing on metabolism of vitamins. It has information with regards to absorption coefficients, things that nutritionists wants to know, and that's very hard to find in common publications. So those two for me, from a nutritional perspective, are my resources.
Moving on to the next question is, what is a book that you highly recommend someone reading that's a non-ag book that you recommend someone reading and utilizing?
For me, I think it would be The Last Lecture by Randy Posch. He was a professor at Carnegie Mellon University. Mm-hmm. He basically was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and then he made his decision to deliver his last lecture to his students, but he also had his children and his family in the audience. Aww. And it's just a really good way to reflect on our purpose and why we do what we do. He was looking back on his life and trying to provide some advice, not only to his students, but to his kids as well. So for me, that it just makes us reflect more on why we do what we do. And I think being able to work in agriculture as a whole, that already gives you so much purpose. And you can see that in all of the colleagues that we work with in this industry as well. So one of my top books.
Sounds like a tremendous read that people should look up.
Yeah, for sure.
So lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
I don't like that question. And I think the reason being is, if you look at our beef industry as a whole, globally even, and I've worked in different roles at a global level, it's such a small industry. And I look around me and everyone is an expert in something. We hold ourselves to such high standards. We all know each other. Everyone's crossed paths with each other somewhere in the industry or in the world. If you look at the training programs our students go through, just for them to be able to enter the industry, it's a robust program. They're made of a different cloth. Everyone holds each other accountable to a different standard. So I'm really proud of our entire industry. Yes, there are some individuals that I can say stands out as mentors, for example, that's recognized for their careers over time. But I think it's just that passion of working in agriculture, working with beef production, knowing that we are actually contributing, you know, not just to sustainability, but we feeding our people. This is how we progress in life. So there are some that stands out, but I think it's just that passion for agriculture and for beef production. So I won't pull out certain specifics. We are all experts at this level when we get into the industry.
No, that's great. Well, thanks, Zeno, for taking the time, and a lot of great information on vitamin D, and and ways that we should be looking at how to optimize it within our beef production systems.
I enjoyed talking to you, Travis. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.